Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Breaking Espanol. Hey guys, it's Jenny. Welcome back. Today's show, we have our Spanish teacher, Lalo Vega, from the Culture and Language Center. We're excited to have him on, and I hope you enjoy a glimpse into his learning style and some tips he shares to get started with any language. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our show, Breaking Espanol. I'm your host, Jenny, with my husband, Ben.
Hola.
And today we have a fun guest. This is Lalo Vega. He is the person who is why we can even talk to anybody in Spanish. We started lessons with him about a year and a half ago, and he's been imperative in our learning journey. And so, yeah, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Well, Jenny, you guys got to give yourself some credit. It's not all about me. It's only been, I've only been the guide. I don't consider myself the teacher. I just like to call myself more as a guide, and that's kind of like the philosophy.
Yeah. So we found you through a friend, but how did you get, well, I mean, maybe start with who you are, where you're from, because I think that's a really good story from, I mean, Colombia and all that. So maybe start off with that, and then we'll go into how you got into teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born in Houston, Texas, and my parents moved to Colombia when I was a baby. And I grew up in Bogota, Colombia. When I graduated high school, I decided to come to the United States to learn English. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into. That was 14 years ago. I'm still learning English.
Did you know any English when you moved here?
I knew some. I was very lucky. I had the opportunity to go to a bilingual school. But the way that a language is taught in any part of the world, I found, is for the test. It's not for you to help you converse the language. So I was not a very good test taker, but, you know, in a big classroom, there's not a lot of opportunities to converse. And in order to learn how to speak a language, well, you gotta speak it.
Right.
So 14 years fast forward, I mean, I served in the military. That was a way for me to pay for university. And then I moved to San Diego in 2007 when I got out, enrolled in university, and I wanted to study just languages alone, but I didn't want to be just a teacher.
Yeah.
It's funny now.
Yeah.
But that's what I do.
Yeah.
And so I decided to do international business, which is business and the opportunity to learn a language. And
at that point, how many languages did you know? You knew Spanish because it was your native speaking
right.
language, and then English from
and then
school.
English from, well, not school, but just from living in the
oh,
U.S.
God. Okay.
And I learned school in the military. I mean, I learned English in the military. Very different English that you will
was
learn.
Was this the United States military?
Right.
Oh,
this was
it.
The U.S. Navy.
Yeah.
And then I decided to learn Mandarin. So I went to school for 2 years. And then I did an immersion program in China for a year. And then I wasn't even into teaching at that time. But it was at that point when I moved to China that just an opportunity came up to teach English. And just an acquaintance of mine was opening an English school in China. And he had mentioned that if I was interested in teaching, I was like, hey, why not? I'm good with people, so let's just give it a shot. And here I am with a group of 3 to 8-year-old children just trying to be as entertaining as I can be in English. And I remember my very first day, and I just like fell in love with the experience. And then I kept teaching on the side English, and I had the opportunity to teach Spanish. And after that, when I came back to the U.S., I knew that that was something that I wanted to pursue. And then after that, I just went into put an ad on Craigslist, and then got a student, got the ball going, started a coffee shops. Then
right, that's how we were introduced to you. Was our friend was meeting up with you at a coffee shop.
Exactly.
I think that's what really
sparked me to want to use a teacher like that is when she said, it's so cool, we just sit at a coffee shop and we actually talk Spanish for, at that time you were doing about an hour and a half lesson.
Correct.
And that seemed really like real world speaking.
Very American dream, right?
Exactly.
It's like if you got the hustle and you have some sort of thing to give back to society,
you just started.
You can make a living, right? You can have a business.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And how many languages can you speak now?
Well, after Mandarin, so I lived in China a year and a half.
Yeah.
And then I took the, it's called the HSK. It's a proficiency exam. There's a TOEFL, like the TOEFL equivalent for English. There's six levels. I took level five. I passed. And then about 500 days ago, and I know about this because I use Duolingo.
And don't you have a 500-day streak?
No. I have a 500.
I don't even want to talk about this.
I have a 503-day streak on Duolingo for French.
Oh, for French.
For French.
Wow.
So
500 and whatever days ago, you started French.
Exactly.
Have you finished it yet?
No, I actually...
Because you keep going back.
Right. So the way I go about with Duolingo is before I move on to a new lesson... you know how it's yellow and then it goes to blue.
Yeah, anyone who's not familiar with Duolingo, it has like maybe three or four bars to each lesson.
Right.
And you finish it, it gets all its bars, but if you go days without doing it, they lessen and it basically wants you to go back and redo them.
Exactly.
So that you're practicing and you're keeping up those skills. Ben's under the...
Yeah, we talk about this in one of our previous episodes.
He doesn't do that.
Well, to me, and tell me what you think... for me, Duolingo, I mean, the whole point is to learn.
Right.
And so me learning how to say balloon or like a noun or something to me wasn't nearly as valuable as learning different tenses of verbs or haber or all these different things that are like really important, I think, to the language, understanding it. And to me, that was like progressing. Like I was learning something versus like, I don't know how to say teacher again or something like that. So I feel like I stopped doing those because I was like, yeah, it's not helping me learn. You know?
No, it's a valid point. And the thing about Duolingo, it's not going to get you conversational. That's right. Number one. It's a great tool to start out. I mean, if you are thinking of learning a language, the very first resource that I recommend is Duolingo. It's free and it's as good or better than Rosetta Stone. Mm-hmm. And it's a great vocabulary builder. It's gonna help you along the way. I mean, it's not all about Duolingo. I do not only do Duolingo. Duolingo, it's one of the leg of a tripod, of a table, if you will. That's how I approach language learning, is Duolingo, it's one leg. A podcast, it's another leg. Class, it's another leg. Workbook is another leg.
And for French, for you, that was almost using your own teaching to learn it.
Right.
Like what you show your students, you went and did, because I knew you before you even knew any French, I think. I think you did your little, 15 minutes you had to talk in.
Right, so I joined a challenge, a community of, it's called the Add One Challenge, and I joined this group where for 90 days, you commit to a routine. So I think having a routine is key. Having a routine and an attainable, reachable goal in the sense of, you know, people come up with, I want to be fluent. Well, that's huge, you know. And again, we don't want to get into fluency because, in my opinion, it's just a matter of, it's very subjective. Mm-hmm. What fluency is for you might not be fluency for me, etc.
We've talked about that before a little bit too, that perspective here really matters.
Right.
Right. Like to us, the level that we're at speaking Spanish with you, who grew up as your first language, we are totally not fluent, but we can communicate.
Right. And that's the whole point. Yeah. It's just getting the point across. And I mean, you guys remember from class, caveman Spanish. Right. It's nuance. It's not about...
Which, can we say you kind of coined that for yourself and for your students? Like... Do you hear other people say?
Right, absolutely, yeah. I mean,
I feel like that was something unique that you showed us, was anytime I would try to over maybe use too many words, or you'd just be like, the way to simplify, you'd just say caveman, you know, and you it's just that really as little words as you can use to get that point across, because you know those words.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, caveman Spanish I thought was really...
When we were in Spain, actually, I think I sent you a picture. There was a play. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it was like something. Cavernícola,
yes.
It was like, and it was a caveman. Because there isn't really like, it's like what, hombre de cueva or something like that?
Oh, cavernícola or hombre de las cavernas.
Las cavernas, yeah.
That's another one.
Man of the caves.
Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah.
I actually like how in Spanish, it's very clear kind of what you're talking, like there aren't as, in maybe, you know, maybe there are, but I'm just not aware of them. But a lot of things are like this of that.
Right.
Like it's very direct when you're talking about,
like you don't say the boy's red balloon. You'd say the red balloon of the boy. You mean
correct? Or just like
words. Yeah.
Yeah, it's more words, but they're clearer and easier to understand, which I think is really helpful when you're learning a language, because then it's like the way you would describe something is often what you call it. Whereas in English, no, we make up like totally different random words for things that don't make any sense. Right. So I think in learning Spanish has been kind of a fun thing about that, right? You can describe something and a lot of times it's right, or it's really close to what the official name is, right? So instead of caveman, it's man of the caves. Correct. Right. Same, you know.
Yeah, there's many ways of expressing the same idea.
Right.
Yeah. So would you be willing to share kind of what your teaching style is, or do you really feel like you have one that you stick to? And is there a formula, right? Is there a formula every new language you do? Is it English? To learn English, you do this. To learn French, is it all the same? Or
top secret formula.
That's what I was thinking.
I'm sorry. I don't want to give out many details. No, actually, it's very simple. The way I approach language learning, it's, one thing, it really depends on your personality, if you're more of an extrovert or an introvert. For some of the students, come more naturally to just follow the bulletproof formula. Like, there's not a bulletproof formula, but the way that I approach every time I learn a new language, and I'm planning to learn a couple more in the future, is you gotta be willing to step out of that comfort zone. You know, people
are... The timidness, right?
People are terrified to sound stupid. I mean, to be honest.
I feel like that's what you noticed in me, right? Whereas Ben was not that.
So if you already sound stupid in English, though, like me, then you're fine. It's like, I have no fear of sounding stupid because I'm already, you know, not sounding too intelligent.
What Jenny's trying to say is that I don't want to...
So if you already sound stupid in English, have no fear.
No. It's not that. It's just having the attitude, you know. It's just willing to just get the point across. You know, it's like I said, willing to step out of the comfort zone. It's huge. Accepting the language for what it is. You know, embrace the process, because it's not easy. But it's a process. It's a skill. I disagree with the statements or the ideas out there that say that there's a gene, or you have the attitude or the aptitude, I'm sorry, to learn a language or not. No, it's a skill that you have to work on it, and it just takes time. There's not a way to measure it, but if you have a balanced routine and you do amount of repetition over time, then you're gonna learn it eventually. And then number three, I just said it, it's consistency. And repetition, you know, just...
It's not falling off and then trying to get back in it.
It's completely okay to fall off, because breaks are okay and are good. And
kind of refresh a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know we haven't had class in a while, but I feel like we've had a lot of experience still, kind of real world, but you know, there's
still, we really had to put ourselves out there to learn it though. You know,
yeah. Like we're not expanding our knowledge of the structure or really new, well, some vocabulary, but we're not really growing our knowledge, but we're really solidifying what we do know and the practice of it. So I think it's a part of the process.
It can go the other way too, because when I had class, I almost just kind of relied on it. Right. You rely on, well, I'm going to get to use it this week or every 2 weeks.
I don't need to go seek out somebody to speak with.
Exactly.
Now I don't think we could be at this point without having done a year to where we understood everything, and then we just are taking those. And there's like future tense we were just talking, and past tense I still need some work on, and that's where I would definitely need to go back to having a mentor or a professor or a teacher.
Right. But again, with the point that you were saying, Ben, in the sense of you know, that's what we did in class. We would speak. And that's the best way to learn a language is by speaking it. Of course, we would talk about grammar, but majority of the time we were just, hey,
yeah,
how's
I always
it going?
Say, que mas. Because exactly. Every time we would sit,
I feel like there were days where 60 minutes straight was just that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right?
And
it was just
down and just talk with you. And
2/3 of the session was just talking about what we did last week, or what we're going to do next week. Or
I think it almost takes you out of that timidness, because if you sit there and read a book for 30, 40 minutes and then you go, okay, now let's speak in Spanish, it's almost like that built up, like.
It doesn't feel like homework either. You know, it feels like, hey, we're just going to go talk. So it doesn't feel like you're in school, right? When you're just talking about your day or whatever.
Right. Yeah, it's conversation.
Yeah. So the reason I was asking you how many languages you know, because are you considered a polyglot now?
Oh, that's a word that I don't like.
Oh, I want to hear this, because I just heard this the other day.
Right. So polyglot or polyglotry, the definition of polyglot, if I'm not incorrect, is a person who speaks
four or more languages.
To a degree. It doesn't specify a degree of what fluency, and we talked about what fluency is.
Yes, because there is no, you can't measure it, right?
So then everyone's a polyglot, because you can say no, and that's like the same in 10 languages.
Not necessarily. It's just a matter of, I guess, the word polyglot, and also the same, I'm going to go on a limb here, entrepreneur. Mm. In the United States, it's looked upon as the hero, the person who's just going out on their own, and just it's put up on a pedestal, and I don't like the way that it's being viewed by society. I'm not saying everyone, it's just the way that it's portrayed.
It's almost singling them out a little bit, you mean? Like
it's almost like a marketing term, would you say? I see it in technology a lot. Like, people say things and I'm like, that's a stupid name for that. And I'm like, no, you're just trying to come up with something that's buzzy or catchy for news. But it's not really conveying the meaning of what it is.
I think it's more because I get your point. Like when I Google language learning or things like that, it's all of us that are bilingual or multilingual. Right. And then it's polyglot. And so it's like on this pedestal, a little bit.
God that speaks broken seven languages.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'd rather speak 3 or 4 well than 7 or 8 or 10 somewhat well. But again, it goes back to getting the point across.
And that's where like the formula to learn languages, if you want to learn French or something, you know what it takes to do it, but it's time.
It's time and practice, speaking it. Usually it takes a lot of effort, tremendous amount of effort, tremendous amount of dedication, but it doesn't mean that you have to do 3 hours a day. You know, you can do 20 to 45 minutes a day. That's actually all the time that I can. That's all the time that I can put into French right now, and maintain my Mandarin is just, I listen to a podcast 3 times a week. I do Duolingo every single day, and then I have a exchange partner.
Is this in French or in Mandarin?
For both. Just to keep them up.
Where English and Spanish, you use.
Exactly.
Well, Spanish first language, English at this point is,
right.
And how do you feel about vocab lists? Like, Do you think people learn from those having vocab lists? Do you have a kind of a...
Right. So it depends on what stage of the learning you're in. So if you're a beginner, you're starting from scratch, high frequency vocab list is what you want to be focusing on. And
I feel like you talked about that recently. You send out a really great newsletter.
Correct.
Weekly, right?
Yes.
You do weekly.
Yeah, it comes out every week.
Yeah.
And we're getting into...
It's been really helpful because I think you break down a lot of stuff, like why would you use one over the other, and you compare, but you also talk a little bit about vocab, how don't rely on it, but there's some high frequency ones, I think is the term you're using for those, and those are great to know.
Right. I mean, if you're learning Spanish, you definitely want to learn the difference between ser and estar, you know, permanent and temporary. You got to know the verb tener because we have everything with tener.
Everything.
And then you got to know some connectors. So usually in Romance languages, you need 250 to 350 words just to get the point across.
Oh, really?
You know, that's all you need.
Yeah, because I feel like we were talking about this maybe... you could say quieres a and, you know, tengo a, or like, you know, I have and I want and all those you could say over and over. And
yeah, you can mix and match.
Yeah.
Querer,
oh, vamos a, right?
Vamos a, right. So there are some words that just repeat and repeat and repeat. So I'm not a big fan of flashcards, but they do come in handy for some people. For me, it doesn't work. Or I do not know how to use them. Yeah. I don't like them.
You know, it's funny. A friend of ours that, I don't know, I wouldn't say he ever really spent a lot of time learning Spanish, but he's kind of the opposite of where I think we're at, where he knows a lot of nouns and things. Like, he knows the word for X, you know, or this or that, whereas we may not know that, but he has no idea how to put a sentence together, which I think is kind of more important, right? Like, I can figure out, or
absolutely,
I can point to something if I don't know what it is, right? But having the structure down, so those high frequency verbs and how to string things together, I feel like, I don't know, is that what you think makes people conversational?
Yeah.
Is when they hit that point of like, I can string it together even if I don't know the word for sink or for grass or a fence or whatever.
Right. And then another skill that is very important to develop once you're starting out is, if you don't know what, I don't know, phone is, you can just describe, is the thing, thing being a high frequency
verb. I used to call.
High frequency word. Exactly. Es una cosa que utilizo para hablar. So, you know, and the other person.
You work around it almost.
You work around it, absolutely. You work around it.
You're really good at making sure we don't get stuck on, I'm sorry, I got to use English to explain.
No. English is forbidden in class.
Yes, it is. You know? It's like the
por supuesto.
Por supuesto. Yeah.
And there's some, we had some funny moments though in class, I know, trying to describe things.
Oh my gosh. You know which ones you're talking about, right?
I'm still waiting for that Twitter account of like stuff people say while learning Spanish.
What was one of your really...
I was trying to say carpet. That one sticks out in my mind.
Oh yeah. Remember this when he was trying to...
And I was saying piso con pelo.
Yeah, piso. No, of course. And then
we did it the other day. Eyelashes.
Oh, okay.
I said pelo de ojo.
There you go.
It's nuance. It's,
what's the real word for it?
Pestañas.
Pestañas.
Eyelashes. So again, just getting the point across. How? Doesn't matter. You know, communication is not just the words, you know.
Correct words.
Yeah. It's your gestures, your hand movements, the way you connect.
Well,
with people.
And that's what we say, like when we travel out of the country. I mean, thumbs up and pointing become very, and just, you know.
We were trying to find a charger for our phone in Spain.
Oh, yeah.
What was I saying? I feel like I was saying, you know what? I remember this because I think I was mad at these guys because I felt like they were just kind of being rude that I didn't know the right word. But I was trying to ask, I was saying like, cargadora de mi celular. You know, I'm like a charger for my phone.
Right.
Like, you should get that. Like, even if I pronounced it wrong or wrong context, I think you get what I'm looking for. And I'm pointing at my phone and they're just, like, como? Como? They're looking around like, what is this crazy American talking about? One guy got it, and he pointed. There was like a electronics store down the street. But it was all about the hand signals, and he couldn't get what I was trying to say. And I just thought, I was like, man, am I that off? And I think I went and looked it up. I'm like, I don't know how else I would have said that. Like, I feel that's a pretty fair.
Electricidad, teléfono, más. I don't know. Just keeping it very simple.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Well, you have a new son.
Right, yeah.
How old is, his name's Nico.
He's 3 months and some change, you know.
Right, like, and you know where I'm going with this. How are you helping to raise him, I mean, multilingual, bilingual? Do you kind of, you and your wife have a plan?
Right, so we talked about Spanish at home.
Spanish at home.
It's a must. Solamente Español. English he's gonna learn, at school.
Out and about.
When we're English speakers, you know, when we have guests or we are with other people who don't speak the language, of course, we would speak English. But right now, I speak to him in Mandarin.
Because you want him to also be fluent or understand Mandarin.
Right. So I would like to just have him learn, you know, some vocab, you know, get a feel for the sounds and what Mandarin is like. But Spanish is a must, and Mandarin, I kind of like, when he was in Chayo's tummy, I would speak to, we didn't know what we were having at the time, so I would speak to the baby in Mandarin, sometimes in French, but I don't want to confuse him too much.
I was just going to say, do you worry about confusing him? Because, I mean, sometimes I even have that feeling, and I'm only trying two languages, and do you worry about confusing him with different words, or?
Yeah, it's going to be confusing, and he's going to be confused.
But they're kind of confused at any language, right?
Right. At the very beginning, you're going to feel that, and I'm no expert on this, but the way I see it is, it's going to be, you're going to think it's going to be at a disadvantage, because he or she doesn't know how to put them together, or he is
like combine them, right?
Combining them, or do not understand fully one language or the other, and it might be fall back at the beginning. But once he gets both,
that's what a lot of people
that have done it before have said. It's like you might hear from somebody, oh, he doesn't know as many words, or it's not that he doesn't. I think children are just processing, and it takes them a while to get the words out, and
right.
I think we'll get to see really how it goes, you know. But from people I've talked to that already have kids that are a little older, like, it's kind of, why not, right? Why not teach them that?
There's a great TED Talk, and I linked to it in one of the previous episodes, where they talked about the difference between learning a language after you have one basically set in stone in your mind, and learning them both at the same time. So in fact, all of us, because when you grew up in Colombia, you just learned Spanish, right?
Right.
Yeah, so to you, Spanish is like your bedrock foundation, right? You'll never not know that, no matter what you do.
Exactly.
English, living here this long, probably the same thing, right? It's set in the stone. But because you didn't learn them together, even though you're totally fluent in English, your brain won't process them the same as if you had learned both growing up. And it talks... Yeah, and it talks about, there's these studies that were done, and they show that basically, like, to a kid's brain that learns both at the same time, they don't distinguish the difference between them, and so the true meaning and nuance of the language, it really is like it makes sense to them,
right?
Like, no matter how good we get at Spanish, if we listen, like, if we were to live in Spain for the next 10-20 years, there will still be things that we see that we're confused by, because we don't have the true essence of what those words meant, because it wasn't, you know, ingrained in us at the same time. So I think that, I mean, there's a huge advantage there.
Right, and that probably ties into, like, the culture, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably the gap that you're referring to, you know, because it's not only the meaning of the words, but just what it means in the sense of culturally.
Mm-hmm.
With the situation, so
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see in language learning? Do you see people make the same mistakes if they come in and start learning with you and they say, you know, we tried this on our own before, does that kind of go back to the trying to kind of make it work right away and learning too many words or just learning phrases? Like, I do feel like I meet a lot of people that are, well, why can't I just learn phrases?
Yeah, it's actually a question I had, you know, because we hear that quite a bit, right? Why do I need to understand,
like, the full language? Like, do you really feel, like, have you...
Versus, like, just tell me how to say this.
Right, well, you don't need to know the full language. You know, you don't need to...
You might never understand what you're saying.
It's never going to end. You know, that this is one thing with language learning, that it never ends. You know, I'm still learning new vocab in English. I'm still learning... Exactly, furrow. Just
Exactly. A second ago,
I have no idea what furrow meant.
Yeah.
So it's constant learning,
and because you speak English so well, I would never think that I do assume, right, that you know.
Right,
it.
But there's still a lot of things that I don't know. But yeah. I guess you gotta ask yourself where do you want to go? Like, how far do you want to go in sense of do you want to be able to just get the point across very choppy, or do you want to sound very eloquent, or do you want to just know Spanish for traveling? You know, because that ties into attainable goals. And I'm getting a little off topic with the mistakes that you mentioned, Danny, but or the phrases. I know one thing that I see a lot when we get new students is they don't keep it simple. You know, they just wanna express themselves.
Like the thinking in Spanish thing, right? Like thinking...
Well, not necessarily thinking in Spanish. It's just they wanna express the same idea exactly in English. Yeah. And that's...
And sometimes they don't translate exactly right.
It doesn't translate.
Like, you just need to really...
Like, you would go totally different about how you would say that.
Right, yeah. Or just...
So, maybe a quick aside about Mandarin, because I understand, and I don't know if it's Mandarin or all languages over there, but I think you had sent us this TED Talk about how they don't have a subjunctive form. And so it was a guy who grew up here in America.
Vietnamese guy.
And his parents had a completely different way of looking at the world because their language didn't have this, you know, form, this like way of expressing themselves, the mood. Yeah. So for him, he said he kind of was frustrated with his parents and didn't understand where him growing up here in America, it's a part of our language. So it's a part of our psyche, or like the psychology we use to think about the world. And so, yeah, I mean, that right there could pose a serious challenge, right? You could be trying to express something which doesn't even exist in the other language.
Right.
Right. And I think Mandarin or, you know.
Yeah, right. Asian languages. Well, Phuc Tran, he was Vietnamese American. He was raised here in the US, and his talk is brilliant.
We'll link to it. Yeah. In the show notes there.
Yeah. He talks about the subjunctive, for all of you guys who don't know what the subjunctive is.
Yeah, I was just going to say, can somebody please explain what a subjunctive
is? We didn't end up buying an English grammar book.
Right. Oh, okay.
Using it, I don't know if I did.
So we have a book that explains that stuff.
So, well, just very quickly, English has it too. And it's very hard to just explain the subjunctive in a few words or sentences. But Spanish has... four moods, one being the indicative mood, that's where reality and certainty happens. Then there's the imperative, the commands, and then we have the subjunctive, uncertainty. And that some of the examples could be like...
Is that I hope?
I hope.
Because I always...
I wish.
Is that a very...
Would have.
That's a very English thing. I remember I always wanted to say I hope, and you
could have, should have, would have.
And you said it wasn't.
In a way, right.
And you said it's not as used in. Did you say that?
No, it is. But, like, for example, the term hopefully, we don't have it in Spanish.
Right, that's right. I
hope that.
Exactly, I hope that, and that's a trigger.
We hope
that something is going to happen. Is it going to happen or not? You're very uncertain.
So Obama would have not won, Running on a campaign of hope.
He got a lot of Hispanic votes, but
so if you say like I feel like I use hopefully a lot. Like I'm always saying like hopefully this or
hopefully.
And so that's when I'm always trying to talk to other people. I do kind of almost stumble a little bit because I can't remember what is the word for hopefully. And that's the thing is.
Yeah. So there are other ways again to express that idea. So Jenny, you could say espero que sí. I hope that yes, or posiblemente. I think that's one thing, one of the words that, you know, there's a lot of words in Spanish that are very similar to English, right? Mm. Posible, inteligente, but for your idea, posible.
It's amazing how much I use that word. Or right, how much they say that posible, idea, hopefully. Yes. Hopefully I'll see you soon, or hopefully...
Sí, posible hablamos más tarde.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the correct idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the correct idea, it's not the proper grammar. But who cares? You know, it's...
Yeah. The goal is to get the point across for especially starting out.
Absolutely. Right.
If I want to go on tour with Juanes and I need to understand all of that, that just won't happen. But, you know, to get to that level... Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's what you're saying. Like we would listen or try to listen to Spanish music. And I remember coming to class and you're like, you know, it's like impossible to really... explain why this means that. In English is the same way. There's certain things that are like, this just means that. I can't tell you why, right. You know?
Right, and that ties into embracing the language, right? Because a lot of people, oh, but in English it's said this way. Well, hear yourself. That's in English. Right. You know? In Spanish it's said differently.
That took me a little while to get over.
What was the one we just learned? Buen provecho?
Mm. Buen provecho...
Provechito?
Bon appetit.
Which ironically, yeah, when you look up buen provecho translated to English is bon appetit. I'm like, is bon appetit English?
No, it's French. Right.
So this Spanish translates to English into French.
Right.
Like enjoy the food is what we...
Well, provecho, if we go into like, if we want to break it down, provecho... Well, the verb is aprovechar, meaning to take advantage. So, provecho, it's like the noun, meaning el provecho, meaning the advantage, but not kind of like the idea. So, good advantage in a way.
Like take advantage, like enjoy, right?
Right. So the idea, it's there, but again, it doesn't
always translate the same way.
Exactly.
Yeah, and another one that I just came across is buen onda.
Oh, buena onda.
Buena onda. And is it good? Because I text you about it, right?
Right.
And that doesn't translate because onda. If you just look on, and we talk about this a lot. Like Google Translate is not always the best.
Well, but hold on. Have you seen the new thing they're doing? You can improve the translation by providing like a real... Yeah, so and it'll even say when you're on there, if you do a translation, it'll say like enhanced, meaning like a person that actually speaks this language offered this up.
But do you kind of know where buena onda came from? Because for me, I didn't really understand it. Like,
well, that ties into slang and, you know, slang in... each language and even in each city, and it's so different. Mm-hmm. So on the it's a Mexican slang.
Is that Mexican slang?
It's Mexican slang. On the a wave.
Yeah.
And it could be. It's not Fish. A. It's not a. It's a sound wave. It's not a wave from the ocean.
Olas.
Ola.
Oh, olas is. It's the wave
from the ocean.
Okay.
Yeah. Ondas, like
it's
an ultrasound sound wave.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, there you go. That clarifies.
Yeah, because she was asking me. I said, she said, if you, because I surf, she said, if you were talking about good waves, would you say ondas? I said, no, I'd say olas. I never knew onda as wave.
Right. It's like a sound wave.
You got it.
Like that's ondas. Correcto.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, that clarified that one. So, because it's fun. It's fun to learn like a kind of a more local way to say.
But we asked somebody and they said onda was person. Which didn't make any sense.
What?
No. What? I mean, well, that's what I mean. It's good having mentors in many different ways because I checked with three people. I checked with the guy that was the server at our restaurant when I first read it. And he said, I don't speak English, but let me go ask this other guy. I'm sorry, he said, I don't speak Spanish, but let me go ask this other guy. And then I checked with you and my cousin Jesse from Honduras, and I was like, and then two came back and said it was good vibes, and one came back.
Lalo, you're the source of truth.
Yeah. It all rides on you.
Oh, I know. It's a lot of weight on my shoulders.
Nuestros vecinos, we don't trust them.
I know.
Sorry, guys. Love you guys. We trust them for local stuff. But a lot of times, because they even ask us. Like, remember we were sitting around trying to figure out how to say peanut butter?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Literally, it's 11 p.m. on a Friday. We're all drinking, and everybody's calling their aunts and uncles, like, hey, ¿cómo se dice peanut butter? They're like, oh. Like, no, because it's not a thing.
Yeah. Because, right. You know, when you're a border town.
And then Jenny's cousin, Jesse, who's from Honduras, she's, because it's Latin America, it's not border Spanish, right? Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just there's different words for things, like you're saying. There's slang.
And that's why for us it's important to learn some local words, because that's who we're talking to a lot, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so funny.
So what is the word for peanut butter?
Cacahuate.
Crema de cacahuate. Crema de mantequilla.
Oh, right.
Or mantequilla
de maní. Was it mantequilla?
Perdón, mantequilla de maní. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Butter, right?
Crema de cacahuate, yeah.
And now, now you can see,
even I'm.
See, now, and then the problem is when I go to Sprouts, it's crema de almendras.
There's a lot of that too, like aceite, like oil.
Oh, sí, aceite.
Sí, aceite de balsamico is like balsamic vinegar, but it's like a.
No, that's not in Spanish, that's in Italian. He always brings this up, and I'm like, the balsamic is from Italy. That bottle is from Italy.
By the way, the last time we were down in Mexico having breakfast, this guy walks in. What does he say? Oh, buenasera. And I'm like, I feel like, right. But I'm like, I feel like at this point we've heard every greeting from like somebody here in Norte de Mexico. But and I was like, damn it. Like, here's another one, and I don't know it.
He thought it was Spanish.
Something, damn.
Well, but it kind of made sense, because será is ser, right? Será is like to be, or like...
No, honey.
No, you're
Italian. Don't try to...
Well, but no.
Don't even try.
I want to go with Jenny on this one.
Don't even try.
I want to go here with Jenny.
I also think he said bambino to Jack, so it was pretty obvious.
Oh, the guy?
Bambino.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
well, right. Unless Bambino comes from... No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, don't even go.
Nah.
Well, Lalo, we really appreciate you coming and joining us today. Like I said, it's been imperative, the learning we did with you, and I'm glad you came here. And I want to let everyone know, how can they find you? What's the best way to kind of keep up on?
Right. So you guys can find me on my website, cultureandlanguagecenter.com.
And you do local San Diego
lessons. Local San Diego lessons.
I'm
on Yelp.
Oh, on Yelp.
What else? No, but there's some other things in the works.
We don't want to
get too much details here.
Later down the road.
We'll have you back on.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
just to
we'd love to have you again.
We'll talk a little bit more about
and
that.
And your newsletter.
Right. So we have a Facebook page, Culture and Language Center. And we have the newsletter if you guys want
to
get.
I'll share that. I'm going to share that in the show notes, because I think it's great for someone who's beginning or at our level, just to like keep up on some of the questions. You do a lot of, like I said, comparison stuff. So I'll link that one in the show notes as well.
Amigos falsos.
Amigos
falsos. I like that one.
Right, that's a great one.
All right, gracias.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Oh, Benjamin? No.
You're saying, I was going to say we need to sign off with some Spanish here,
sí,
Jenny.
Por supuesto, Jenny.
We should have Lalo do it.
No. Jenny, es tu turno para cerrar la conversación.
Gracias por escuchar. That's about what I'm
going to
do.
Nos vemos entonces.
Nos vemos en el próximo episodio.
Sí.
No, yo. Ustedes.
Oh. You can always tell when I didn't fully understand. I'm all, sí.
Okay, chicos. Sí, muchas gracias y bueno.
Gracias, Lalo.
Keep up with the good work, and you guys are doing very well. And
are we moving? Are we past caveman Spanish yet?
Yes, you're still caveman Spanish. You gotta own it. You know,
I do own it.
Before you move on to medieval, And the ultimate renaissance, you know, you're still in a caveman stage. And that's a good stage to be in. You can get away with a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Adios.
Adios.
Thanks for listening, everyone. You can now subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud or any other app you use, as well as you can listen directly at breakingespanol.com, where we include all the show notes from each episode. All right, that's it for today, guys. Ciao.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.